You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
The podcast with Dan Gardell and Greg Evans.
You ready, Greg?
Yep.
Hello and welcome to 1874, the podcast. I'm your host, Dan Bardell, joined by The Athletic's Greg Evans to look back over Aston Villa 3, Bournemouth 1, Villa's probably best home performance of 2024, right back in the rhythm that it felt like we were in 2023 at the business end of the season. This show is sponsored by NordVPN and you can get an exclusive Nord discount if you go to 1874.io/NordVPN. As I mentioned, you'll get a huge discount and you'll also get 4 months for free. And it's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. A little bit more about them later on in the show, and you can also check the link in the description for more information. Right then, Greg, let's talk about it. Brilliant, brilliant day at Villa Park on Sunday. The sun was shining, but first, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Dan. I've got a golf book later, so can't complain. But yeah.
Always starts with the golf. Like, golf always has to be brought into the show in some way. Even if I don't do it by making a joke, you happen to be playing golf that day. Like, the word golf is probably said as much as the word Villa on this podcast, I would say.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
I'm taking it seriously again. I'm having a little run.
When
were
you not taking golf seriously? When did this happen?
No, honestly, I've had a really bad. I know this is boring, and we'll move away.
Some people like
very, very quickly, but
yeah.
I've had such a bad run of form since probably back end of August. I decided to get some lessons when I returned from my 3 month holiday.
That's like me getting podcast lessons. I've been doing it for so long now.
No, why are you getting? You don't understand how hard golf is. Golf is literally the hardest sport in the world.
Terrible at it.
And you know the reason I love it so much is that nobody in the world can help you when you're out there. You are on your own. It's the only sport in the world where you're totally in control of everything.
Okay.
So that's what I like about it, but it can be infuriating. Yeah, I've been having some lessons and I'm feeling good and I'm playing golf later.
I can't believe you don't do a golf podcast. I actually can't believe that you don't do one.
Yeah, I kind of feel like I've missed the boat. Do you know what I mean? You know, when everyone started podcasting and then I just thought, you know, you've got to have a bit of a, you've got to have a bit of either a niche or a bit of a background behind you. And I just play golf. I'm very, very normal. I'm like so many other golfers who just play. I've got nothing special to talk about. So,
okay. Hopefully the producer edits all this golf chat out before we get into it. A little disclaimer. I've just been to personal training and been on a machine and you have to lean your head on it. And I seem to have got a weird mark on my head. So if anyone's wondering what that is, it's from the gym just before we start. And I've also sorted my room out a little bit for those watching on video as well, starting to get my office together after the house move. So it looks a little bit more aesthetically pleasing behind me. But if you're listening via audio, no one really cares about what I'm saying and no one really cares about what Greg's saying about golf across all platforms. Anyway,
the bananas in my bottom right corner.
Lovely selection of bananas, Greg. Looking just ready, ripe and ready to eat. I would say. Right then, should we talk about some football? We should probably talk about Aston Villa on the Aston Villa podcast that we do. Lovely day at Villa Park on Sunday. The sun was out, although it was deceptively cold. I went in just a T-shirt and was quite cold. Leaving Villa Park, was grateful to get back to the car. But after, you know, Thursday, having the rigmarole of 120 minutes, the emotional journey that the players and the coaching staff will have been on, you know, winning on penalties, all the Martinez stuff, which, you know, we look back on and was absolutely excellent. But that, you know, the players must have had tired minds and tired legs going into that game on Sunday. They're coming up against a really, really energetic Bournemouth side, a difficult team to play against in transition, rely heavily on pace, will have had a game plan. But Villa were brilliant, Greg. I think I would say that was Villa's best home performance of 2024.
Yeah, look, I think they allowed a few early chances for Bournemouth, which was a bit of a concern. I look back to that Ezri Konsa tackle when he denied Solanke when Bournemouth were 1-0 up. That was a real game-turning moment, I think, for me. You know, if Bournemouth had gone 2-0 up at that point, I think, you know, even for Villa, the way they went on and won the game 3-1 and very comfortably and emphatically, I think it would have been difficult for them at that point, being 2-0 down. So that was a real important moment in the game. Brilliant, brilliant tackle. And then from there, I think Villa went on and really took control of the game. Bossed the midfield, passed it around nicely. Clearly executed the game plan to perfection. You know, you could see Villa were starting to play a little bit longer, a little bit more direct, especially in the second half, and that clearly worked. And yeah, I mean, you know, full credit to them. I think the biggest story from this season, for me anyway, is the fact that at the start of the season we were saying, can Villa handle the Sunday to Thursday schedule? Well, I actually think it works in their favour when they play these games. Now, it feels like they are in more of a rhythm when they play so often. And, you know, it'd be interesting to speak to the players and see how they feel physically and mentally, because, yeah, they would have been really tired after the Lille game. You know, 120 minutes, not many changes to the team, you know, emotionally charged, a very tough atmosphere to go and play in, you know, to get the job done really late and actually lose the game. If you remember, they were the worst team on the day. And over the two legs, I thought Villa were quite lucky really to get through, because if it wasn't for Emi Martinez, they wouldn't have got through. You know, fantastic in the first leg and arguably even better in the second leg because of the penalty heroics. But yeah, for me, the real story of this season for Villa is how brilliant they have been after the European games and how they've gone into the Premier League games with a plan, executed that plan and typically gone on to either win or draw the games, you know. After qualifying for the Europa Conference League after the, you know, Hibernian qualifying rounds, Villa have played 10 European games and they've only lost once in the Premier League directly after a European game, and that was against Spurs. So that in itself is brilliant, because we've seen teams like West Ham, you know, for the last couple of years, struggle to perform in the Premier League after a big European night. And we've seen it again this weekend, didn't they? They went out to Bayer Leverkusen and then got battered at Crystal Palace. Villa seem to be the opposite. They seem to somehow find another gear after these European games, which is you know, incredible and testament not only to Unai Emery and his coaching team, but the players as well, because it is a very depleted squad now.
Yeah, you mentioned the depleted squad. You mentioned a fair bit of stuff there that I'd like to go through here, but let's stick with the depleted squad. You know, I think it's 7 first teamers missing. All of those would be involved in the matchday squad. Arguably, maybe 5 would be in Villa's best 11. So you've got, you know, Moreno, Mings, Buendia, Zaniolo, Douglas Luiz, Kamara. There's one more.
Ramsey.
There's 7 players missing. If you looked at Villa's 11 from the last game of the season last season, most of those players would be in there. So the fact that, you know, Villa can go and play on a Thursday 120 minutes and then go up against tough Premier League opposition on a Sunday, and really Villa were the better team, even though they went behind, I would say Villa were in control of that game and put in a really, really good performance. That some of the football was absolutely spectacular. I absolutely loved watching. It felt like the fizz was back in Villa, the precision of the passing. Everyone, players knew where other players were going to be when they were receiving the ball and things like that. It felt like Villa had their rhythm back at home. It felt very rhythmic towards the end of last season and the start of this season at Villa Park on Sunday. It definitely felt like that again. You know, back-to-back wins in the Premier League as well, which wherever you are in the table will always do you good. Villa have managed, despite everyone levelling, you know, if you listen to, like, obviously I work in football media, you know, whenever I talk about Villa, everyone always says, oh, the Thursday-Sunday thing, it's going to be a problem for Villa. And you can get lulled into believing that. But, you know, with your stats and with the eye test of watching Villa on a Sunday, I think you're right. I think, you know, the fact they did the travel as well, I think the travel's the biggest problem with Thursday to Sunday, not so much playing the game. It's the travel aspect that comes with it. I think maybe the players came back straight after the game. You probably know better than me. Yeah, they came back straight after the game on Thursday, didn't train Friday, and then did minimal on Saturday, I think. To come in and put a performance like that for all the stuff we've just mentioned between us, that's so, so impressive. And it just speaks volumes about the manager that Villa have.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, look, the key to it all is the manager, of course. You know, he's been brilliant. But let's not forget all the little bits around the edges, you know, the recovery and the sports science and all that that goes into it. You know, there's you have to manage the loads well. And I suppose the benefit of having Unai Emery as your coach is he's done this for years in Europe. You know, he's been used to this routine, especially playing on a Thursday, you know, in the Europa League and obviously going and winning so many of those with various clubs in the past. So he knows what it takes. You know, he knows when to give the players off. I mean, okay, the players will probably want a few more days off, that all players do. But he knows when to sort of mix it up, when to really pull back the intensity in the training, when to schedule meetings, when to give players a little bit more of a lie-in, when to give players days off, how to motivate them. And the big motivation for this weekend was the 2 days off directly after Sunday. You know, it was, let's get through Thursday, let's fly back on the night, have a day off on the Friday to recover, come in on Saturday, you know, train very light, we'll go through some meetings, all get together as a team and get the plan ahead of Bournemouth, go and execute the plan against Bournemouth, and then there's 2 days off to recover, and then hopefully that will set Villa up nicely for the week ahead and next weekend. And it feels like there's one big push now to get to the end of the season. We said a couple of weeks ago, let's hope Villa have 9 games left. I think it's, what, 6, is it now? Yeah, sorry, yeah, I think still want seven because seven with the final. Loads of things on the back of that. I think Villa have come through their toughest test in the Europa Conference League now. Don't think it gets any harder for them. There's going to be the hostile atmosphere in Athens and playing Olympiakos at home in one of the legs, the away leg, of course. That's going to be tough. But I do believe they'll have an easier test over the two legs than against Lille. I feel like they're in a much stronger position than Tottenham now in terms of they've got 4 games left to go, Villa. You can never predict results, of course, but you expect Villa to go and get two, maybe three wins, and why not four? But, you know, we're looking at Villa getting 2 or 3 wins now. And that's going to leave Tottenham needing 4 or 5. And if you look back throughout the course of the season, Tottenham haven't won 4 games in a row, I don't think, or they might have done it once. So there's a lot of pressure on them. And I think when you're in those positions where you just have to keep winning, it's good to have the points on the board because games are running out. Tottenham aren't in the best run of form. They've got some tough games still to come.
Injuries now as well.
Yeah, injuries piling up. And look, it's really at the business end of the season now where all these fine small margins matter, and Villa have done most of their hard work. I said last week that it was a season defining week, and they've got through this period incredibly. You know, beat Arsenal, got through the quarter final against Lille, and then won against Bournemouth. I think their position, beautifully now. I see them going on and getting to the final of the Europa Conference League and finishing in the top four.
Yeah, the weekend before when we beat Arsenal and they lost to Newcastle, that feels huge now. That does feel like the pivotal. I think we'll look back and say that was the point if we do go on and get fourth. I think what that's done as well, the Arsenal win as well, I think it's given them some belief again. I think they've always been strong-willed and strong-minded in the Villa squad anyway, but there's no doubt that form was a little bit patchier than it was previously. Yeah. When they've gone to the Emirates and beaten Arsenal, that's done something to them, because I thought they were absolutely superb on Sunday against Bournemouth. You know, that I felt like they've got their rhythm and their belief back. As I said, in the Premier League, look, Thursday was difficult. There's no getting around that. But in the Premier League now, I feel like we're back on that mindset of knowing what needs to be done. And even on Thursday, you know, we got through. You know, Manchester United in 99, they were terrible against Bayern Munich for 90 minutes, but they won the cup because they were good for...
And that's all you remember, isn't it?
Yeah, they were good for stoppage time. Villa did what they had to do. Villa teams that have played badly in the past go on and get walloped. They don't get through. There is this steely mentality now that even when they're playing badly, they still go and take something and can kind of do the minimum they need to get through. Villa have picked up like points here and there where I thought, oh, we weren't brilliant today. Bournemouth away, for example, was one. West Ham away in recent months. You know, Villa have done things like that all season. It's all these little things that add up and have got us to the point that we're at now. We're in a brilliant position because if we can beat Chelsea Saturday night, and I think it will be a brilliant atmosphere at Villa Park. I think actually having a night game on a Saturday, I have no idea why it's a night game on a Saturday, but I think that will actually play into our hands. To be 9 points ahead of Tottenham, and I know they'll have three games in hand, but you'd rather have the points on the board.
Rather have the points, of course.
And they've got a tough game. They've got a derby game against Arsenal on the Sunday. So Villa now, with what they've done in what you said was a pivotal week, have put themselves in the best position possible. We'd have all taken what's happened. I wouldn't have believed that they could have done what they've done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. And in the last week, Greg?
No, I thought something would have to give. And I've kind of thought this all season. You know, I keep thinking something will have to give at some point. And it felt like it was going to be that Lille game. You know, 2-0 down with a couple of minutes to go. It felt like that was going to be the sacrifice almost. And if that had have happened, there would have been a lot of sadness here now and you know, amongst the Villa supporters, because they want something to, finishing in the top four is the most important thing, because it takes the club onto a new level by qualifying for the Champions League. But supporters want something to really feel justified about the season, and winning a trophy, you know, would have been that. So there would have been a bit of sadness if the Lille game didn't go to plan, and for a very long period it looked like it wasn't. You know, fair play to Matt Cashew, who had only trained, I think, two times leading up to the game, and come in and had a really big game, didn't he, by scoring that late goal that made a big difference.
He looked like the only one that was going to score in that game for some reason, from right back.
Yeah, he had a couple of chances, didn't he? And then obviously tucking away a penalty nicely, you know, with a lot of confidence there. So fair play to him. And I think what we're just seeing, you know, what we have seen throughout the season is players stepping up when they've really needed to. You know, Villa have missed Douglas Luiz and perhaps more importantly, Bouba Kamara for a long period of this season. Yet you've got players like John McGinn and Youri Tielemans who can come in and fit that role perfectly. And I mean, you're looking at the way the two of them are playing now, and they don't really miss Luiz and Kamara because they're playing so well.
They've won both league games, aren't Luiz, which I didn't think would be possible.
Yeah, me neither. And that just shows the strength of the squad now. And, you know, there are a lot of clubs in the division that were looking at Villa's squad, even at the time when it was managed by Steven Gerrard, you know, with a little bit of envy, thinking that's an underperforming team. That is a team that should be, you know, fighting for Europe. Certainly not necessarily chasing a Champions League spot at that point. But it was an underperforming team because the players are full of quality. They were signed for big amounts of money and, you know, all at a very good age as well, with a much bigger potential resale value. And I think what we're seeing now with the Villa squad is, yeah, they're now missing six or seven players who would really help from the bench. But and we know Villa are a little bit tight on you know, FFP and profit and sustainability, etc. But you look at the sort of six or seven players that are missing and you think, okay, maybe four of those might be in Villa's strongest squad, or strongest team. I certainly think Tyrone Mings would be. I still think Ramsey's, Kamara definitely.
Luis.
Yeah, I mean, Luis is suspended, so he'll be back soon. But I'm thinking more of the injuries. With Emi Wendy, I've never been fully convinced.
Oh, I think he would have been a brilliant 12th man off the bench this season. He'd have played, yeah. He'd have played a lot of games, wouldn't he? We might not be
able to
get 11.
Yeah, he'd have got a lot of minutes. And I'm sure there would have been times where he would have made a difference. But I just look back to his previous seasons, a little bit like Bailey, you know, also wrote him off and look what he's done since. I just feel like Wendy has never really done it in a Villa shirt. So I don't feel like they've particularly missed him too much, but some of the others have. But then you look at the players that are missing and you think, well, yeah, they would have come back in and strengthened the squad. And it certainly would have helped in games to help Villa get over the line maybe a little bit quicker, or see off games that maybe ended in a draw. But they're going to have to sell some players this summer, aren't they? They're going to have to move players on because inevitably...
Is that Villa definitely true now? Because if they get Champions...
Just let me finish. They are going to... Unai Emery is going to want to bring new players in, you know. I don't think they need too much, but there will be... There is a desire to improve the squad even further. And it's inevitable that Villa are going to sign players. So it's also inevitable that they're going to have to move players on. So in a couple of weeks, we're going to be having the discussion of, you know, who are Villa going to get rid of, because they will need to as well. They will need to bring some funds in because of, you know, the way the books look. Yes, if Villa qualify for the Champions League, it's going to help with the revenue. You know, we've seen only yesterday that they've announced a new shirt sponsor for next season. So that's another step in the right direction to bringing more funds into the club and increasing the revenue streams. But there will be players that will move on, and, you know, it's deciding who they are going to be.
It will be interesting because, you know, I know the PSR rules are changing slightly. I'm not an expert on this kind of thing.
Not for
next season. But,
you know, it doesn't come into play.
Forget like the financials. I see Villa this summer, whatever happens, whatever they qualify for, and, you know, minimum it will be Europa League now. Like last summer, they made three big signings in Pau Torres, Diaby and Tielemans. I see that every summer will be a bit like, I think Villa will make three big signings that they think will improve the 11. But even from a registration point of view in Europe...
You're looking at five or six going out then, aren't you?
You have to move people out to free up the space. We've seen that Callum Chambers couldn't be registered because we didn't have the space.
Yeah.
For him this time round after January when you had to redo the squads. Villa will, if they're to buy people, Villa have to sell people. Zaniolo will probably go back. I don't think Villa will sign him permanently, even though there's been an upturn recently. But they will have to move people on. I'm not even talking about finances. I'm talking about from a registration point of view. So he's going to be another interesting summer.
It's going to be really interesting, isn't it? Because you look through the departments and you think, well, you know, when Mings comes back, there's four good centre backs. Longley, you know, they're not going to sign Longley.
Longley for Mings, won't it?
Yeah. And so you know, you've got four good centre backs. You don't really want to lose any of them. And you wonder, are they probably not going to sign anyone in that position? No. Then you look at midfield and you think, well, you've got Luis, Kamara, McGinn and Tielemans. No real need to sign anyone. You've got Timmy Rabunam coming through. No real need to sign anyone. And then you look at the attacking positions. Wendy coming back, Ramsey coming back, just sign Rodgers, Duran and Watkins up front. and Bailey and Diaby as the wingers. It's really strong. Don't really need to sign anyone, but they will. So who moves on?
They'll sign another right back. I think they'll want a second right back, so Konsa doesn't always.
I mean, they have signed one, haven't they?
It's whether he's ready or not, isn't it? I don't think we'll know that until prison. I see them, you know, what I think will happen, I think probably this is just wild prediction on my behalf. Luka Dean will probably go because he's on high wages and he'll be replaced with a fullback, maybe a fullback that can play right back and left back. I don't know. I see that as being something that might happen. Then I couldn't even tell you in midfield. I think Zaniolo will go back, but maybe Buendia takes his place in the squad because Buendia and Mings won't have been registered for in Europe this time around because there would have been no chance of them playing. And I think Duran will go and I think they'll be a multifunctional player coming as someone who can play up front on their own or play wide or play as a second striker or whatever. But there's going to have to be some rejigging. I think, you know, you might sell someone who's a surprise to you, but in a way that Villa would be happy with that because they know they've got to do it, if that makes sense.
I mean, I think it's... Look, Villa are not under any massive, massive pressure to move players on, but they know that it would make good business sense to do that. They're not in a position where they want to lose or have to lose a key player, so they're not going to do that. But if a really big offer comes in for a player that makes good business sense, I think they'd be open to it this year. But then you look at it and you think, well, who might that be? You know, would it be a Newcastle maybe putting a big money bid in for Ramsey? Would it be a real top club coming in for Kamara and then, you know, moving a player on lot for that? I don't know. It's too early to say, isn't it? You know, we're months away from it, really. But for me, it wouldn't be a surprise if a surprise player moved on.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you've mentioned Jacob Ramsey there. You know, January Villa brought in Morgan Rogers, and I would say he is a player now that does a lot of the things that Ramsey can do. I think arguably he does some things better than Ramsey, but I still think Ramsey, obviously at this point, has played more Premier League football. I think he's the better player when he's fully fit, which we haven't seen all season, and he can get in a rhythm. Ramsey's a real top level Premier League player. Morgan Rogers has had to play maybe more than perhaps he should have had to have played at this point. But what that's done is he's kind of gone through the pain period with things in his game that weren't refined straight away as they wouldn't be because he'd never played in the Premier League before. He's got through that period and now he's coming out the other side and got that experience of playing Premier League games now. And he's getting better and better by the week and becoming more important to what Villa do. By the week, he had a good game as a number 10 against Arsenal. Played on the left-hand side again against Bournemouth at the weekend, kind of coming in a lot to make that box. He was brilliant. He scored another important goal as well, and he's getting better by the week. And a credit to Villa's recruitment team, because in the modern day, that's a small transfer fee, and they've identified something in him that, you know, I think they think Unai Emery can get more out of him, can make him better, like he has done so many Villa players since he came in. And he's turned into a really important part of Villa going into the business end of this season.
Yeah, I'm starting to really like the look of him. I think it was a slow start for him. He needed to get used to the Unai Emery and the Villa way of working. I thought that he was struggling a little bit defensively, in terms of what he was asked to do when he was tracking back. Gets a lot of bookings, doesn't he? That may be something he might.
He's fouled a lot as well.
Yeah, he does. To be fair, maybe it's a bit of frustration going the other way, but that might need to be cut out. You know, just one small criticism there. But I think what we're seeing now is a player with a lot of confidence, a brilliant goal. I don't think he scores that goal early into his Villa career.
No.
You know, in the first couple of weeks, I don't think he has the confidence to chop back in and score like that. And I think the biggest sign for me was the celebration. If you compare the celebration on his first goal, where he was absolutely ecstatic and almost relieved to get off the mark, to his celebration at the weekend, where it was like, yeah, I belong here. I'm a Premier League player now. I've moved on from the Championship. I'm good enough to be here. He looked really assured of himself, and turning into be a very good signing. Yeah, Villa liked the look of him, having done a lot of opposition scouting ahead of the Middlesbrough FA Cup game. They'd seen that he was a real threat for Middlesbrough. And then look, you know, his numbers sort of spoke for themselves. He was scoring and setting up a lot of goals around sort of October, November, December time. And he's in a really good position now, kicking on and getting closer to where Jacob Ramsey was when he was playing regularly for Villa.
Yeah, he's so unique as well because of his frame. That's what he's got over Ramsey. I think Ramsey's not weak by any stretch of the imagination, but Rodgers' frame makes it really difficult. You know, he can shield the ball well when he's running. He's got that power because of his big frame. I think he's 6'1". I think he's the same height as me. I don't have the power that Morgan Rodgers has.
And you know, and that was also another part of it, the reason behind the recruitment of him. You know, he fitted a certain profile. Villa wanted a taller player in those positions, you know, to increase the average size of the team, because for a while Villa have been a very short team, so they wanted a little bit of extra size. And from my understanding, he's helping out quite a bit at set pieces as well because of that size element.
Good information, makes sense as well. When we come back, we'll talk about Ollie Watkins. But before we do talk about Villa's main man, let's hear a little bit more about NordVPN. 1874 is proudly sponsored by NordVPN, so when ain't and you can't watch it, we want to help you. NordVPN is a secure and private service which works on pretty much any device, including your laptop, mobile, or television. So if you want to watch some live content, it allows you to appear like you're in another country. And whilst you're connected, no one else can find out what you're doing, including your internet service provider. Beyond this, the service also has threat protection baked in to protect you from intrusive website ads and malware, which is pretty handy for you. As part of NordVPN support performance for free, this also includes Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. All you've got to do is go to 1874.io/NordVPN and sign up. All the details are also in the description. As always, we're very grateful to anyone that signs up. We know that money is tight, but if you think NordVPN will help you out, it will also help keep the channel running and help us too. Right then, Greg, Ollie Watkins, probably the player I reckon we've spoken about most this season. Probably gone through every podcast, and other than the mentions of golf, it probably would have been Ollie Watkins that we've mentioned the most. Didn't score at the weekend, 2 assists. And just this guy's all-round game now is just high level. Highest level, I think, you can get. I always backed him and thought, I always said Villa cannot do better than this guy up front. But he's got to a level now where, you know, if you'd have said to me Villa are pushing for the Champions League, I may have thought in my head, maybe they've got a different striker. What Emery's done with Ollie Watkins, what Ollie Watkins has taken on. He is now, at this current time, the best striker in the Premier League on form at the moment. There's no better than him. Haaland, you can argue, is a better goal scorer, better striker. Ollie Watkins is the man in the Premier League at the moment. In terms of goal contributions, he's top. Watching him with the eye test,
this guy is brilliant. Yeah, he's brilliant. I love this. It's a great little story behind him because, you know, what he's done in the last sort of 18 months or, you know, since Unai Emery's come in has been brilliant. You know, his figures speak for themselves. You know, he's going to be going to Germany with the England team in the summer. And if he isn't, something serious has gone wrong. He is a much more confident person now, A, on the pitch, and B, just sort of in himself. You know, he's a father now of two kids. So his sort of personal life has been... you know, it's not been easy when you have kids. You know, it changes everything behind the scenes, and you know, for him to be very settled at home is great as well. But I just remember, you know, right back to the start when he signed for Villa and Dean Smith saying that Ollie's biggest problem is that he doesn't believe in himself enough. He doesn't understand or doesn't know how good he is, and as soon as he knows how good he is, he will kick on even further. And I found that out myself when I had time with him. You know, he didn't come across as a confident striker. Admittedly, at the time when I last spoke to him at length, he was going through a really tough spell under Steven Gerrard. Had just left the club and he was struggling.
It was a tough spell for everyone. It was a tough spell for me,
and it was difficult. Yeah, but. What he's done since has been brilliant, you know, really kicked on, taking in all the instructions that Emery and his coaching team have put into him. But he's doing it himself now. You know, he's scoring with his left foot, with his right foot, with his head. And he's the complete striker. When he doesn't score, he assists. When he doesn't assist, he plays brilliant and holds the ball up well and puts in the level of performance that makes me think that Villa can't get a better striker than him right now.
No, I wouldn't change him for anyone. I've said that previously. There's literally not a striker in the world that I would change him for. I think he does everything that Emery wants, everything that Villa needs. And oddly, although I think he's kind of playing at the top of his game at the moment, I'd back him to find different levels, because I think him and Emre together, I think they've shown that they can get levels that maybe you didn't think were there. I've got so much time for him. He comes across like a nice person as well. I always think. I interviewed him once as well, and he was just a nice guy.
Yeah,
he's a really, really nice guy. And I just think he should be so proud of where he's come from, for one, because he's worked his way up the leagues. For players who, you know, come through the leagues, not many, you know, they might go on and play Premier League football, but they don't get to this level now. They don't go on and play for England. It's unbelievable.
It doesn't happen very often, does it? You know, we've seen players like, yeah, Jamie Vardy's obviously the classic example. Yeah. when he went through the leagues, eventually moving to Leicester and then getting into the England squad, etc. And Ricky Lambert, I think, you know, is probably another one that you could put into that category, although not quite as you know, good as what Watkins has done. But yeah, the whole story behind it is brilliant. You know, it's a fairy tale story, isn't it? Coming through the leagues like that, performing well at every level, kicking on, earning your bigger moves, and now literally being at the top. You know, there is no better striker than him at the moment in the Premier League. So must be an amazing feeling to be that good.
Yeah, you talk about the lack of belief as well. There's a good interview. Well, it's not even an interview. It's like a feature on the Premier League YouTube that I watched yesterday. Him and John McGinn doing like an interview together, talking about each other. It's well worth a watch. But you can just tell by the way Ollie even carries himself in interviews now that he's got that little bit more confidence. I mean, it must be so easy to do an interview sat next to John McGinn because he's so funny. But even the way Watkins
takes the pressure off a bit,
yeah, but just the way Watkins is speaking, they can just feel like he's got that belief. And yeah, check that interview out on the Premier League YouTube channel, because it's a good 6-7 minutes. It's very, very funny listening to those two in that feature. Kind of touched on Tillemans and McGinn as well. You know, I tweeted after the game, it was like watching Xavi and Iniesta in midfield.
I mean, look, you know, that's pushing it a bit, I'd say.
They were both so good on the ball. The way
they were very, very good, but I mean,
McGinn,
you know,
right?
I think the pair of them would admit that even you're
forget Xavi and Iniesta. It's all about McGinn and Tillemans. I'm not even Villa's first choice central midfield as well. That's how good Aston Villa are nowadays. But McGinn, right? Because he's obviously not easy on the eye the way he does things, but in tight spaces, he's as effective as a Iniesta or Xavi or a David Silva or whatever, because he always gets himself out with the board. It just doesn't look as nice as it does when it's a David Silva, for example.
Yeah, and it's what every manager who has coached him says. You know, they say
this is a new level now. What he's doing, it's a new level that we haven't seen before.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's playing really well in a really exciting team, and playing with confidence. And look, what we forget is that, you know, McGinn was almost at the point where he was considering leaving Villa. You know, there were other Premier League clubs interested in him, and he was, you know, not necessarily weighing up his options, but he was thinking about, well, you know, is this the right time for me to move? Because he wasn't playing well under Steven Gerrard, and the position that he was being asked to play in, he was not getting the best out of his game in that position with the players around him. But look, it's much different for him now, like the rest of the squad. You know, another wonderful story, isn't it? His rise. We've spoke about him in the past, and I've written about him loads. You know, I love the backstory of John McGinn, and just a, you know, genuinely brilliant guy. So funny, so down to earth, so humble. You know, not many footballers like him, but. It's when you speak to opponents and they say, I hate playing against John McGinn, that you realise actually how good.
Interview with someone the other day, wasn't there? They said he's so hard to play against because of his arse, basically.
Well, yeah, that's one of the reasons. But yeah, it's his strength. But just going back to your initial point, every manager has said, yeah, you look at John McGinn and you focus on his energy and his enthusiasm and his you know, ability to pull others through games, but his technical qualities are brilliant. You know, you think back to some of the goals that he scored as well for both Scotland and Villa. You know, you don't do that if you're just a workhorse in the middle of the pitch. He's got proper, you know, genuine skill and quality as well.
Yeah, he's absolutely first class this season. I'm finding it tough to choose between him or Watkins as my player of the season at the Villa. I genuinely think McGinn's been up there with him playing in a variety of roles as well. I've told this story before on the show, but you know, you talk about last season when he was made captain and probably at his lowest ebb at the football club. I saw him at a foundation event and you could just see, I'd met him before, he just wasn't the same, wasn't as bubbly, wasn't as jokey. You could feel he was like carrying the weight of the world on his shoulders under Steven Gerrard. Said himself that, you know, he wasn't playing well at that time. The fans were on his back. I kind of look up, I'm not perfect, I don't get everything right about Villa and doing podcasts and stuff. I look back to how I kind of spoke about him at the time when Mings lost the captaincy, and I think because I was so tunnel vision annoyed about the way Mings had been treated by Gerrard, I said a few things on the radio, on the TV that probably I didn't word them correctly. I've always had loads of respect for John McGinn, but I probably didn't word those things correctly given the service that he'd given Villa. I kind of said he shouldn't be made captain, he's on bad form himself, but I don't think I articulated it as well as I probably would do nowadays, and I look back and regret that. But credit to him, you know, the way he's turned it round is absolutely brilliant. You know, he's been a great servant to Villa, and now I think the opposite of what I thought when I thought he shouldn't be the captain. He absolutely should be the captain. The way he's led this team, the way he leads this team now, he's the heartbeat of this team. And generally, when John McGinn plays well, Villa play well, he does still owe me a shirt because I won the raffle that night and he never gave me the shirt. Maybe he was annoyed.
By the looks of your collection, you've got enough.
I have got enough. But you can never have too many match worn shirts, Greg. But yeah, maybe he was annoyed with what I'd said on the radio, perhaps. So, John McGinn, if you're watching, I regret that time, and you're absolutely wonderful now, and I love you to pieces. What a player for Aston Villa, and what a servant he's been. Tielemans is brilliant as well. He's been one of my favourite players in the Premier League for a number of years, and he's come to Villa now, and I think we're just saying that just oozes class, pure footballer, ability on the ball. He's doing some lovely turns and stuff recently as well. Did a Cruyff turn in that game in the first half. He just oozes class, Youri Tielemans as well. And you just look at the Villa team in general, so many likeable players, so many really, really strong footballers, all people that are capable of playing in different positions. You know, the team spirit, it just is what a team. This will go down as the best Villa team I've watched. They're absolutely top class.
Do you remember those times when we couldn't put together a shortlist for player of the year?
Yeah,
there was one season where Matt Cash just won it because it was just, there was nobody else that had played.
He scored a few goals near the end of the season at the end of Gerrard.
So he just like won it by default almost because all the rest were rubbish. And then there was a couple of seasons before that. I think Villa didn't even do Player of the Year one year because they were that bad. Was that the relegation year?
Yeah, even the year before they didn't do it. The year they got to the FA Cup final and got smashed. I think they cancelled the award that year as well.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it, how times change. You know, it just shows in football that you get a couple of good appointments, and you know, you have the real backing from the top, and things can change and move in the right direction quite quickly. I mean, if you think of a 5-year plan, which you hear quite a lot in business, don't you, and modern life, you know, like now we've got a 5-year plan, but is there a better 5-year plan than what Nassif Sawiris and Wes Edens said when they took over in the championship?
They have got a little bit. Look, they left it till right at the end of the plan. The Emery appointment has completely.
No, but I mean, I don't know. But you look at the 5-year plan, and it's like it's not a case of getting it done immediately. They got promoted in the first season. They stayed up on the second season. They established themselves in the third season, and then they started kicking on. You know, really kicking on, and. We, as I say, we hear about 5-year plans all the time, and I just think it's incredible what they've done. But you know, you look at it the other way. If you get the wrong appointments or the wrong guys in charge, which you know looks to be the case for me at Chelsea, it can go wrong pretty quickly. You think of how Chelsea have capitulated almost since Roman Abramovich was forced to leave because of everything that was going on there. But you know, it just shows you would have never thought really that Chelsea would drop out of the, let alone the top, certainly not the top six, but the top four, and then chasing for titles and European competitions. Just shows how quickly it can go wrong, doesn't it?
Yeah, in such a good place, this club, whether they finish fourth, whether they finish fifth, whether they win the Europa Conference or not, the position and the state of this football club now is top draw. On the pitch, you know, I could go on for days about off the pitch at the moment, but on the pitch, absolutely top class. And you were asking me about the atmosphere yesterday, weren't you, Greg? I thought the atmosphere was spot on Sunday. I'm the first to criticise when I think the atmosphere isn't what it should be or the crowd turn. Villa went 1-0 down. Matty Cash gave away a penalty. Yeah, Villa fans were singing his name. You know, I think the fans stayed with the team at 1-0 down, which doesn't always happen. I think they realise now we are on the cusp of something. And I thought the atmosphere was really, really good on Sunday. I've seen other people say it wasn't, but I disagree with that. Certainly where I sit in the whole scene, it was a positive, vibrant atmosphere the whole way through the game. And of course, there was the 1897 group now housed in the Doug Ellis, probably not in the best place, but the club are a bit hamstrung really with where they can give them the space that they need, because basically everyone wants a season ticket and all the season ticket seats are taken and all the match day tickets usually get taken as well. And credit to the club for working with the 1897 group as well. I'm the first to criticise when the club does something that I don't like, but I give them credit for working with the 1897 group. I can't say whether they had an impact on the atmosphere or not. You could certainly see them from where I sit in the whole 10, but I think they're housed in a difficult place to try and generate atmosphere. If you think about the kind of similar group at Crystal Palace, it's bottom tier behind the goal.
Arsenal really have almost got that a little bit as well now.
It's hard for Villa at the moment with where they are with the stadium and the demand for tickets and stuff. It's difficult for Villa, but they were there. Hopefully it can get better. I'm never going to knock anyone who tries to do something positive to the football club and tries to make things better. And that's what the 1897 group were doing. But yeah, I was enthused by the atmosphere, Greg.
That's good to hear because, you know, if the atmosphere isn't good right now, then I don't know when it ever will be, because Villa are at the peak of their powers now. You know, there hasn't been a more exciting period for sort of 10, 15 years, has there? So if the atmosphere isn't good now, then, you know, it's never going to be. I think, you know, what we'll probably start to see with Villa fans now, especially those that go away to European games, is that they'll almost become a little bit jealous and envious of some of the atmospheres on the continent, because they are much more hostile and just loud in general compared to English grounds. Now, I think, you know, if you travel across English grounds, certainly the really big teams, you know, your Man City's, Man United's, Liverpool, Arsenal, not so much, because they seem to have turned the Emirates round a little bit. Previously, it was very, very quiet. But the atmospheres are quite bad, I find. And, you know, I go to games every weekend and I'm all across the country. And typically, I just find it a lot louder in Europe and a lot more intimidating and hostile. And you know, maybe Villa might be able to play a bit into that and change the way Villa Park is perceived. Because I think for a while, when the going hasn't been great, the atmosphere isn't great. And I think it feels like Villa fans are quite... not quick to turn on the team, but they quickly lose the appetite. I've always thought that my whole time there.
And I've sat in the same place for 31 years. I've always felt Villa Park has been like that. Even as a kid, I remember Villa being top of the league under John Gregory. And, you know, there's people with banners saying Gregory out because they didn't like the football. And I was top of the league. Like, I'd never understood it as a kid. I think it's always been a bit like that. But I think, you know, I don't think you'll find any Villa fan that goes to games, that doesn't go to games, that's abroad or whatever. Everyone supports the club in their own way and the best they can. I firmly believe that. You ain't going to find a person who doesn't like this manager. It just doesn't happen, is it? So we should make the most of that. And, you know, the atmosphere should be positive because we've got this manager and this set of players that we love.
Yeah, and I think, you know, on the flip side of it, when the team really needs the fans, that, you know, they are there. If you look back to semi-finals, Villa have got, other than the horrible, you know, two-legged result against Bradford, which is, you know, 11 years ago now, 2013, wasn't it? You know, Villa's record in semi-finals at Villa Park is very good. And the atmosphere has been very good as well. So I think, you know, something to look forward to against Olympiacos, regardless of how the... Oh, no, they play at home first, don't they?
Home first, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So,
next week.
So, yeah, it's next week, isn't it? Wow, that's come around quick. So something to look forward to next week. I think the atmosphere will be really good. You know, what we've seen in previous semi-finals, I don't know the plans yet for this semi-final, but what we've seen in previous semis is, you know, the club put a little bit more on to sort of build up the atmosphere. You know, you remember some of the big tifo in the playoff semi final, I think one of them, or maybe it was
a big banner lion countdown. I remember that against West Brom.
Yeah, a couple of things, and I just remember speaking to some players after various semi finals. Mille Edin, that was one of them, and he said after the Middlesbrough semi final, he said he'd never heard an atmosphere as loud as that. So.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
When the players need Villa Park, they do turn up.
Mille Yednak, the enemy nowadays on the Tottenham Hotspur.
Oh yeah, of course.
Coaching staff isn't there. I don't like seeing him on the Spurs bench. It upsets me.
I'll have to try and get him on over the summer. See if he fancies another chat.
Well, I'm still scared of him. Still scared of him after our interview that we did with him, and he I asked the first question and he just went, "Yep." That was a haunting moment. I worried about how that interview might go. At that point, thankfully, we warmed him up, and it went on, and it got better. I remember seeing him. I don't know if I've told this story before. I saw it. I went to watch a Stoke game, and I was in like the bit where scouts and whatever would sit for some reason. He was watching. I think Badais actually was on loan at Stoke at the time. Mm. So Philogene. So he was. Yeah, that was loan manager at the time. He was sat in front of me, and he was watching. He was watching Philogene and Jed Steyer, because Jed Steyer was playing for Luton actually. Yeah. And he saw me, and we went up and like had a bit of a chat and shook hands. And then for some reason, as I shook his hand, I like patted him on the back. I don't know why I did it. And then a look he gave me. I was thinking, was this guy patting me on the back? But he is it. You know, I've heard from other players that I know and stuff that he is a really, really like nice guy. Everyone loves him, but God, he's authoritative. I'm still scared of him now. I am.
He's a very unique character, yeah, because he's very serious and you can't ask him anything sort of, not stupid, but anything, I don't know, you've got to be very clear.
I can't remember what that question was. I don't think
you asked him something
question.
About COVID. You said, oh, how you been doing? Are you doing well during COVID or something like that? And he just went, yep.
That's the most worried I've ever been during COVID, wasn't it?
Yeah, he just said, have you been coping all right during COVID? Yep.
I can still feel it.
A lovely, lovely guy. Do you remember when Jack Grealish picked up that sort of freak injury against Watford in the pre-season game? Yeah, Grealish had to go to hospital obviously that night, and he stayed over. And the only guy that came to visit him in hospital was Mille Edin. First one to go and check on him and make sure he was okay. So just little things like that, which will be. You know, just a testament to his character.
Yeah, what a guy. We wish him the best of luck with his Europa League campaign next season, hopefully. I hope he's never going to find out. I've said that. I wouldn't have thought. I know I am scared of him. I'm very scared of him. Just back to Villa Park and the atmosphere. We were talking yesterday around like reasons, and you say that like at other grounds it's the same. It's not not a Villa Park thing, and it is because of the way, unfortunately, that football is going, that, you know, the everyday fan is going to be priced out. And there is a focus on making more revenue through corporate things, which I hoped Villa would go against that a little bit, and that, and they haven't. In fact, they've done things that I completely disagree with in the whole team. But it's not just a Villa problem. It's a, you know, it's a Premier League problem. Now, that's the problem when you've got a product like the Premier League that everyone loves. You know, it's going to be difficult. I think of, like, the season ticket prices have gone up tenfold in the last 2 years, and they're about to go up again, is my understanding of it. This is going to sting Villa fans, and I hate it. I think about families of four that will go down, and that they would have, what they would have paid 2-3 years ago compared to what they're going to be asked to be paying now. And, you know, trying to explain that to kids that maybe it's too expensive and we can't afford to go anymore. I don't like to see Villa fans put in that position at the expense of, like, all these new areas. And I get it. Look, I like going to corporate every now and again. I'll go maybe once or twice a season. I might even go again before the season ends, but I'll always keep my season ticket and sit in my season ticket seat, because that's where I want to be. But it's a difficult moment for fans at the moment, when everyone does the best they can. Everyone supports Villa in their own way. I just don't like the way it's going, and I think we're about to see more of it.
Yeah, it's really tough. I've been working on an article for The Athletic about this, so I've spoke to quite a few directors at sort of boardroom level across various leagues, and, you know, across the Premier League, and the feedback now is that clubs are seeing a spike and a rise in people who want to come to the game, but also want, like, that lounge experience sort of before or after a game.
They don't want to do what I do, where you just go to the game and you're in the concourses.
Yeah,
and...
I mean, there's still obviously a huge amount of people that want to do that, but the new supporters, which, you know, so many of the bigger clubs are now trying to attract, are keen on doing that, are keen on going to the game and maybe having, like, you know, like a gourmet burger and a pint or whatever before the game, and then something at half time and something after. They want the overall experience. And certainly people who are coming from the US, and, you know, you're seeing a lot more sort of Asian tourists that like to come to games now at the higher ranked teams in the Premier League, and they want more of that experience. They want you know, they want a bit of food with their match ticket, and to sit in, like, a nice lounge. And, you know, Villa have played into that. Other clubs are playing into that. You know, Liverpool have rebuilt the Anfield Road stand recently, and a lot of the tickets there involve an element of hospitality. You know, you can pay a little bit extra and have that lounge experience before the game. And, you know, some people will be listening to this and cringing at the thought. They just want to go, sing their hearts out, have a beer and a pint or whatever, and then that's it. And then there'll be others who'll be listening who go with their three kids. I know a lad who, you know, earns a relatively modest wage and takes his three kids to the game, and it's really expensive. You know,
it's a real strain
on his finances. And if those finances are going to get you know, pushed even further, it's going to be hard for him to continue doing that. And there will be stories like that, you know, across the board. So, yeah, it's a tough time. From the club's point of view, I can understand why they feel the need to increase season ticket prices, because they're moving in a new direction. Now they need to increase revenues to stay competitive and keep trying to bring Champions League football to Villa Park. But just look at the amount of money that, you know, the coaching staff and the players are earning, and then you think, you know, the increase in season tickets is effectively a player's wage, isn't it? I mean, look, Matt, that's a bit of a loose comparison because I don't know the exact numbers, but you know, you can look at all different angles.
Look, in the summary, Villa have in their mind they want to spend a certain fee on a player, and the club asks for an extra $2 million, they'd do it, wouldn't they? Yeah. Any club would, because in the grand scheme of things, that's nothing. But yet,
and you think how much $2 million, you know, over
the fans
mean
to
sports. But yeah, look, you know, it's sadly it's just the way football's going now, and you know, everyone understands how tough it is.
I really don't like it though. Like, as I say, I mean, I've been invited to go into corporate on Saturday. I haven't decided whether I'm going to go or not yet. But I just. It's those people that you're saying, and your mate who takes his three kids. Now, I was lucky when I was a kid that, you know, prices weren't a joke when I was younger, and my dad got me a season ticket when I was seven, and I've never looked back, and I've gone every week ever since. You know, I was in a fortunate position. The demand wasn't the same for tickets then either. That's the problem now. The demand is so high for tickets. And it was, even when we weren't that great after COVID. I think, you know, COVID people missed going to the football.
Yeah.
Didn't they? And it's the landscape's changed now. And I feel sorry for all these people. You know, I've heard stories of people who, you know, have had to move seats so certain things can get put in, seats that they've sat in for like 20 years. And I like to think of Villa as a family club and that they'd be better than that. But unfortunately, you know, my opinion is at the moment, I don't think they are. And there's a lot. I understand certain aspects of what they've got to do, but I don't like the way they've gone about certain things. There's a lot of cloak and dagger stuff that I believe goes on at Villa that I just don't like. And, you know, for me, sometimes I shouldn't probably speak about this stuff, obviously, with what I do working in the media. But for me, you know, I always think of myself, I'm a Villa fan first. I'm not one of the people that has a season ticket. I go to the Villa every week, and I don't like the way the fans are being treated at the moment. There's a lot. That's personal opinion of mine. It might not be what everyone agrees with. That's how I feel about it. I don't like the way the fans are being treated. I think they're being squeezed in every aspect, and it's not on.
I think just more broadly speaking, the stadium changes and improvements and, you know, the additions of new facilities and the sharpening up of Villa Park, I think is really important because forward-thinking clubs have to do this. And the ones that don't get left behind, I look at how Old Trafford has, for example, has been left to sort of, not rot, you know, that's the wrong word, but it needs more than a lick of paint now. Do you know what I mean? And
Villa was
heading towards that stage, and there are lots of things that need still changing. But there's a lot that's gone into it already that's been used to try and modernise it. And I think, you know, Villa are trying to move forward in that way. And I think they certainly were anyway when Christian Perslow was the chief executive. Things have changed a little bit now, and we're waiting to see what the overall plans are. You know, with Chris Heck all pretty much assuming that position. But I do think the real forward thinking clubs, they need to understand how important it is to keep the stadium in good shape, because if it isn't, they get left behind.
I think I can always speak from quite a unique point, because I've worked in football, I've worked with the club, I've been behind the scenes at times, and I'm a fan that pays for a season ticket and I go and sit in my seat every week. But you're asking me, well, over the last 2 years, you've raised my season ticket twice and you're about to raise it again, I believe. Our facilities are exactly the same. Nothing. I've got less toilets because of the terrace view, so everything's overcrowded. Less areas I can go and get food. The service is still pretty bad, in my opinion. You're asking me to pay probably a couple of hundred extra quid again for exactly the same. Yes, the product I'm watching is better, but that's not the point, because I was there when we were rubbish and there every week in the Championship, and, you know, and Di Matteo, Bruce, when it was terrible, and I was watching us lose 3-1 at home to Barnsley. You know, yes, the football's better and I love it and I love my club, but I haven't changed how much I love my club. I'm enjoying watching them more, and I'm, you know, the product I am watching is better. But what I'm walking into every week before the game,
the actual experience, it's exactly
the same. And you're asking me to pay probably by the end of it £400-£500 more than I was paying a few years ago. I don't think that's on, personally, but I can understand it to a tiny extent. But when you think of the ridiculous money that goes through football, the money that's wasted, I just want Villa to be better than that. When I feel like they've played on being a family club in the past, but these are all my own opinions. Look, there's lots.
One for a longer and deeper podcast, I think, with much more you know, insight from other people and a more balanced perspective. You know, it'd be good to hear what Villa say about some of these things. It'd be good to get other supporters' thoughts on it as well. Maybe one we can look at over the summer, because I think it's a really interesting topic.
Yeah, look, I'm not purposely trying to dig the club out here. I'm speaking about my own opinions, and that's all they are at the end of the day, my own opinions. And I can speak about things that, you know, I think I know, but behind the scenes and what's going on, things I don't like, and I will do that. But, you know, I can only talk as a match going fan, a season ticket holder. They're my opinions, and I'm sure there'll be many people that feel the same. Anyway, we've kind of managed to turn it into quite a depressing end to the podcast, and negative when it should be really, really positive. So yeah, forget off the pitch now. Let's just end, you know, on the pitch at the moment. Villa are absolutely brilliant, and to some extent, like I said, the club are between a rock and a hard place, but I think they can do better. Aston Villa Football Club can do better in that regard. But certainly on the pitch, you know, they can't do better. It's absolutely perfect. And I'm loving every second of being a Villa fan. Greg, thank you ever so much for joining me. Adam, for producing. And thanks to those for watching and listening. Wherever you are watching or listening, if you could do all the things that help us as a channel, like the video, like the podcast, subscribe, comment, you know, do you agree with what I've just said about the Villa Park stuff? I'd be interested to see what the opinion is in the comments on YouTube. So leave us a comment around that as well. It's like leaving us some comments to who you think might be player of the season as well, because it's certainly going to be a hotly contested award that in a few weeks, I would think. I'll be back with a match preview with Dave Reid later on in the week as well. So watch out for that. If you've subscribed with your notifications on, you'll know exactly when that is out. Have a great rest of the week, Villa fans. Yep. Enjoy the football that's on this week. There's some Premier League action, of course. So, yeah, up the Villa.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.